Get 15% off a set of BrakeBest Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Now playing Open Floor.
This is Open Floor. Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix back at it. An NBA podcast with Sports Illustrated senior writer.
I think it's time that the world get to know
my guy Chris Mannix.
I think your opinion is shared by everyone.
And now it begins.
Now it begins.
Bang! This is the Open Floor NBA podcast where we talk about the league. And the biggest story in the league on Thursday is that the Lakers have finally hired a head coach. J.J. Redick will be the new head coach of the Lakers on a four-year deal. Redick was at some point the front runner, and then it was Dan Hurley, and now the Lakers have cast their lonely eyes back to J.J. Redick. Dan Wojcicki is the Lakers beat writer for the Los Angeles Times. And Dan, we were just talking before we came on to record about just the bizarreness of this process.
Yeah.
Like, is this... this has got to be the most bizarre coaching search that you've seen in a while, hasn't it?
I've done some weird ones, Chris. I mean, I did the Doc Rivers, like, trade for a coach thing, which was, you know, when the Clippers, like, we're going to trade for Doc Rivers, and it took, like, 3 days for it to get done, and there was, like, maybe they're going to trade DeAndre Jordan for Kevin Garnett, too. And, like, that was a pretty strange one. Frank Vogel search for the Lakers was a pretty strange one. Frank Vogel was going to be an assistant. Tyronn Lue was going to get the job, and then that didn't happen. And then maybe Monty Williams, but then he went to Phoenix. This one, though, is like, I guess what I'm saying is that, like, weird coaching search in, like, L.A., like, does kind of, it's like right underneath the Hollywood sign in really tiny print. It says, like, we're going to have a weird ass, can I curse a little?
Yes,
we're going to have a weird ass, we're going to have a weird ass coaching search. This was a strange one, though. I think so. I hope your listeners don't mind. And Chris, maybe you and I can kind of break this down for people. Like, what was really interesting about this for me as a reporter was that there were two really distinctive, like, lines of information that were coming in, and they both turned out to be true and both turned out to be wrong at the same time, which was externally, like, starting at the combine, right? Was the Lakers are going to hire J.J. Redick. Like, that was when I first started really hearing this and hearing it in very definitive ways from people, right? Like, you know, I had heard some talk about a meeting potentially between Rob Pelinka and J.J. and, you know, that it had went really well and that, yeah, you know, they're not saying anything, but, like, they want Redick and that's what they're going to do, right? And then the second type of stuff was, like, the stuff I was hearing from, like, inside the building, though, was much more like, you know, like, Rob is telling people, like, be patient, that, you know, ignore the outside noise. Like, that was the word that was used, noise, right? And sure enough, you know, when the Dan Hurley thing comes, it's like, okay, like, is that what he was talking about? And, like, Dan Hurley is the type of pursuit that, like, doing it in secret probably makes more sense, right? Like, he's recruiting. The portal is a thing, you know, all of that stuff. Like, they're talking to Alex Caravan about coming back to school. So, you know, this was as good of an NBA secret as, like, we've had in a really long time. Mm-hmm. Like, there are no secrets in this league. And that was a real secret. And so were they focused on J.J. Redick back at the combine? Hard to say. You know, it sounds like that's when the Dan Hurley stuff, you know, like, started to kind of, like, organically take shape. Was how it was sort of phrased to me today, now that we're kind of starting to peel back some layers on this. The Redick stuff, like, didn't just come from nowhere, though, either, right? Like, so it was sort of like they were driving a car down two different paths at the same time, it seems like. And in the process, they ended up at the one place where everybody thought they would go at the beginning. They just took a weird road to get there.
You know, when we heard first about Dan Hurley being the Lakers coach, the word that was used often was program, build a program in yep. LA that extends beyond LeBron James, that maybe even extends beyond Anthony Davis. Do you think the Lakers have that same mindset in hiring J.J. Redick?
I think so. And I think, you know, look, you can look at, like, who is J.J. Redick at his core a product of? Mike Krzyzewski, right, and Duke. Like, now he's not the Dukiest Duke person of all time, like when you meet him and things like that. I mean, he's pretty Dukey, but still.
That's a phrase. Pretty Dukey.
Pretty Dukey. But, like, you know, like, that's a huge part of, like, you know, that's how the public met him, right? He's the all-time leading scorer, like, the dominant college basketball program of the last 40 years. You know, he scored more points there than anyone else. But, like, yeah, so, I mean, I think he is a program person, right? Like, he is a lot of the things that if you're going to talk yourself into J.J. Redick, a lot of the things that you're going to like about him are these types of skills, right? Like, that he's an incredibly hard worker. He's analytic, but he's open-minded, too. You know, he knows what it's like to be a modern NBA player. So he should, in theory, and not only that, but he knows what it's like to basically fill any role on a basketball roster. Like, you know, he was unquestionably a star for 3 years in college, like the top of the scouting report. He knows what it's like to carry a team night to night. You know, he was a rookie who had no place in a rotation, really, and had to earn his way into a, like, so he knows what it's like not to get the minutes that he wants. He knows what it's like to be the most important role player on his team. He knows what it's like to fall out of favor in that job too, right? And so he needs to use all of these experiences to kind of, you know, to build what he thinks is like the right recipe. But whether they can say culture, they can say all this stuff, whatever they want to do. I mean, like, the unflattering way to try to frame what they're doing is, and it's like a verboten word in the NBA, is two timelines. They are entering two timeline territory, right? Where they have
a saw that with Golden player. State. That didn't work so well in Golden State.
Well, they won a title. I mean, they won a title. But
they did. Still, but they gave up on kind of that two timeline thing to a degree.
To a degree, right? NBA champion James Wiseman?
NBA champion James Wiseman, yes.
So they are both simultaneously looking, because they have to. What choice do you have? You have a 40-year-old player next season. And LeBron James, who is still an All-NBA player. Was he on your All-NBA ballot? Do you have him on
he
All-NBA
was,
ballot?
Yeah, he was third on my All-NBA ballot.
Okay,
I took some grief for that, but he was third on mine, yeah.
So he is a still an All-NBA type player, right? Good enough on a night-to-night basis to be that. But he's 40 also, right? And you don't know how much longer you can be able to go, only that we know we're at the end. In some fashion, right? Like, we don't know whether or not there's another act in this story left or whatever, but, like, we know the credits are going to roll here pretty soon. So they are not only trying to maximize the final days of LeBron James with the Lakers, or really within the NBA, but they're also trying to put themselves in the best position to move forwards. And, look, they can say things like, and you're hearing things, you know, that this is about like second apron to some degree, right? Where you want to find a coach who knows what it's like to work with younger players, who can, I don't think they met 9-year-olds in Brooklyn, but like, you know, JJ knows how to do that. That is his coaching experience. But like, who can, like, you know, take guys like Max Christie and help elevate them, because you're going to need them. Austin Reeves, you take Austin Reeves from being, you know, a good player to a great player. You know, and you not only do you coach them, but you also like build your roster in a way where they have to take these sort of steps. How that lines up with 40-year-old LeBron James, unclear to me. They seem like they're opposite plans.
All right, let me give you my Lakers hot take. You can tell me
lay
if
it
you
on
agree
me.
With me
lay it on
or
me.
Not. I don't think the hire of J.J. Redick matters one bit. I think you could get Eric Spoelstra to coach this team. You could staff him with Ty Lue and Tom Thibodeau, and it wouldn't make one bit of difference next season, because I don't see a pathway for the Lakers to meaningfully improve. The team they had last year won 47 games. We know there are injuries to Rui Hachimura, among others. There's some of the supporting cast were out for a period of time, but we just talked about this. LeBron played an all-NBA season. Anthony Davis had what was his most durable season in a long time.
All-NBA season as well. Yep.
Yeah, all-NBA season. The core of this team played. The two core guys played and played really well. And that still was only enough to get 47 wins and get into the play-in tournament. Now, I know Rob Pelinka is going to get aggressive this offseason. You've got three first-round draft picks to potentially trade right around the draft. You've got some movable contracts on that team that you could piece together and meet the financials of a deal. But, like, is DeJounte Murray, is he going to propel this team into the top of the Western Conference playoff field? Is Trae Young going to do it? Is Zach LaVine going to do it? All the names that are available that we know right now, I don't see how any one of them, when you factor in what kind of players the Lakers will have to give up to go and get that guy, I don't see how any one of them improves this team in a meaningful way. I also don't know that LeBron, at turning 40 end of December, is going to be the same player he was last year. So it's my opinion, Dan, that like the Redick, the dialogue around the Redick conversation is addressing the wrong topic. Like, Redick could be a great coach. I don't think we're going to know next year. I don't think there's anything that coaching can do to propel this team up the Western Conference standings, because the Western Conference is incredibly good. I mean, we saw just on Thursday, right after the Lakers announced their news, Alex Caruso is headed to Oklahoma City. Is there a better fit right now than Alex Caruso in Oklahoma City, where now you have like the Celtics of the West, where you've got three wing players in Shea, Caruso, and Lou Dort that can lock you down? You know, Nuggets are good. Timberwolves are going to be as good. Like, I don't know, man. Like, I think this Redick story and this Redick coaching hire is a lot of talk about something that may end up ultimately being meaningless.
Well, I mean, I think that's where, like, sort of the back end part of the hire, right, that matters, which is that this isn't a today play. This is a full year play, right? This is a bigger picture, sort of long term type of thing. It's not a this second thing. And so for me, Chris, I think you're largely right about kind of the status of the West. I think I will say, though, this team felt like they left money on the table at times last season, you know, and they point to coaching as part of that. Like, I think one of the biggest ways that came from that was too much rotation experimentation. I think, like, it is there was too much, right? Like, you preach continuity, you brought back your people, and, you know, of that group, Rui Hachimura spent time on the bench. Jared Vanderbilt, because of injury too, spent time on the bench. D'Angelo Russell, starting lineup, spent time on the bench. Austin Reeves spent time on the bench. Like those kinds of things, like, just chipped away from the overall, I think, level of confidence in the coach. And by changing the coach, just period, there should be like an initial sort of thrust into like, we're behind this guy, right? I don't think it's a secret that the Lakers and players and Darvin Ham didn't coalesce in the way that anybody really wanted. So I think there's that part of it. So they think, like, okay, you improve that area, you get a little bit better in game with adjustments, you manage your timeouts better, all that different stuff. Now, look, if JJ Redick had a track record of doing these things, I think that's a better argument. I will say, though, there are ways that people can be utilized potentially that could change. Like, I mean, we saw what Austin Reeves was able to do last summer, you know, with Team USA offensively. Like, maybe there's a higher usage role in play for him. You know, maybe JJ Redick is the guy who can get through to LeBron James and get LeBron James off the ball more, cutting more, you know, using his smarts and you know, using his energy in that way versus just, you know, like, kind of the more ISO-driven way that he did the last couple of years. Is JJ Redick the guy who can, you know, now that the Lakers have, and I think this is an underrated part of last year, they had no point of attack defense. It just didn't exist on their roster. The two guys that were supposed to do it were bowled out for the majority of the season, Jared Vanderbilt and Gabe Vincent. You know, now that you have your defenders back, can you be creative enough in funneling people towards Anthony Davis in ways and hiding, you know, your deficiencies elsewhere? I think that stuff could all make them better. Does it make them Thunder good or Timberwolves good? I don't know. Probably not, you know, but I think that, like, to your point, I guess that doesn't matter who the coach is then. I think though there is a belief, Chris, that particularly in this West, it's gonna be a lot of this is gonna be matchup driven. Right? Do you put yourself in the best position to get the best possible matchup? And then who knows what's gonna happen, because There's going to be 9 good teams, you know, and you just have to be ready. So, you know, you got to give yourself, instead of having 3 good matchups, try to give yourself 5. I mean, I say this out of total respect. I don't believe Dallas was the best team in the West this season. They were playing the best probably at the very end. But they caught the right types of matchups for them on their way to the finals. You know, the Denver team that I saw against the Lakers certainly looked like the best team in the NBA. You know, or I'm sorry, pardon me, the best team in the Western Conference. That didn't hold at all in the second round. You know, and there were times where I think the same can be said for, you know, how good Minnesota looked against Oklahoma City and Denver. Did I get that wrong? I got that wrong. How good Minnesota looked against Denver, right, in the second round?
Mm-hmm.
You know, was negated by the thing that Dallas was able to do, that Denver did, the way they were able to protect the rim in a way that Denver doesn't protect the rim and different things. So I just think, like, you just got to put yourself in the best possible position, and it's going to be that way in the West. And that might be, unless you're the Celtics, who certainly look like they've got at least a real sizable window. Like, that just might be the way it goes for everybody right now. Like, when I talk to executives, man, people are spooked about kind of, like, how you're going to have to build a roster. You know, I had a GM use the word draconian to me when talking about, like, the penalties for that second apron and stuff like that. And you know, so people are looking in different, more creative ways to do it. And I think this is, you know, in some ways, the Lakers' way of being more creative.
It's almost impossible to build a roster the old way, right? Like, we saw Phoenix try to do it. Didn't work out for them.
Saw the Lakers try to do it 3 years ago.
Having 3 stars on your roster doesn't work anymore. You've got to build out with, like, 2 stars and then a bunch of guys like the Celtics have that are Porzingis, Jrue Holiday, you know, kind of B-level guys, B-plus level guys on your roster. I hear what you're saying about the injuries. And there's no doubt, like, having Jared Vanderbilt for only 29 games hurt them. Having Gabe Vincent for only 11 games hurt them. At the same time, like, can you count on Anthony Davis playing 76 games next year?
No, you can't.
Can you count on LeBron going 71 games at 35 minutes per game next year? Same thing with D'Angelo Russell. He was healthy last season.
Austin Reaves played every game last season. No, you're right.
Like, so,
I mean,
like
some of that injury luck is going to flip, right? Like, that's just... So that's where the second piece of this comes from the Lakers' standpoint, which is, like, we've got to be developmentally organized. We've got to be, you know, really, really, you know, invested and excited in taking our younger players and finding the most efficient ways to improve them. The ways they're going to have to do that, coaching is going to be a huge part of it, right? We're going to see it on J.J. Redick's staff. But say, like, now look, he was a tireless worker as a player, super interested in things analytically, in terms of tech. You know, he's a very forward-thinking, open-minded person. And so I would imagine that they will invest in that stuff. And then I think the other part of it, though, is, like, from a Rob Pelinka level, you have to give people pathways to play. And this is hard to do, again, when you have LeBron James at 40, because you want to surround him with the best possible players of free agency. You're going to go into this, right, this summer with, like, a couple min slots to offer. You know, establishment is generally the way that teams go when you're trying to compete. I'm sorry, you know, like veterans and stuff like that. So you try to find the players that you know you can trust to slot into these places that can play those 10, 11, 12-minute shifts, right? The Christian Woods of the world, what they tried to do last year with him. Torian Prince, for instance, right? Well, you know, there's talk, like, we've heard Chris Paul's name. Should he be a min player? You know, is that a guy the Lakers should go after? Great in the short term, right? Like, has some short-term utility. I think Chris Paul's a really good player still when he stays on the court. But you spent a first-round pick last year on a point in Jalen Uchifino. And you need to play these players. Like, you need to start building up. You've got a guy, Max Christie, who, you know, you've invested in. And he's a restricted free agent who the Lakers intend on re-signing. If you're going to have him, like, you have to play him. The reality is it's going to have to come in game. Your best players, again, 40. You're not going to be, you know, on the practice court, you know, puking after win sprints every day. That's not what it's like. That's not what it's like anywhere in the NBA. It's especially not what it's like on a team that's as old up top, you know, as a LeBron James-led team is. So you have to do it on the court, and so you have to give those guys pathways. And I think that was a myth last year in the way they built the roster. Take the center position, for instance, Chris. They end the season with Jackson Hayes playing for coach, which Jackson Hayes didn't get his rookie deal extended in New Orleans, is a prospect, tremendous athlete, has some things he has to learn, right? Like, has to learn how to not foul. The first three-plus months of the season, he's splitting back up five times between Christian Wood, occasionally even Rui Hachimura or LeBron James in some lineups. He's not on the court regularly. He's still fouling a ton. He's not a trustworthy rotation player. As the season wore on, though, as the reps sort of regularized, as Christian Wood got hurt at the All-Star break, and it became clear that it will be Jackson Hayes every game, good, bad, or otherwise, he played better. And when Anthony Davis played some games, like, Jackson Hayes had some really big nights. And I think, like, that is – they need to do a better job of that when they build out this roster. They have to, like, not put hurdles in the way of the younger players they've decided they want to invest in. They need to clear runways for them. And then you have to trust your scouting and development. And if you get it wrong, you get it wrong.
I agree with all that. I just don't know how they can make all that happen within like the 2-year window that they got.
Yeah,
right.
I know.
Like it's threading the ultimate needle if you're the Lakers to succeed at the highest level while LeBron James is on the roster. Look, there's a pretty clear blueprint, Dan, to being successful in 2024 version of the NBA.
Can I give it to you?
Yes.
All right, I've tweeted this. I know basketball's more complicated than this. Dribble, pass, shoot, defend, call.
I'm more taking kind of a less granular look. Like, I'm like, you got to stink, and then you get better, and you take your lumps along the way. Look at the teams in, like, the Final Four, basically. Like, the Celtics stunk for a number of years, took some lumps, got better. Last year, the Nuggets, same thing. Took their lumps, got better. Minnesota, in the process of taking their lumps and getting better. There's a way to do things now. And the Lakers are trying to do it a different way, and the Suns are trying to do it a different way. And I don't think either one of those teams, Dan, has a chance of pulling it off. And like why to bring it full circle, like, I just don't – like, Redick could be the greatest coach in the NBA. He could be coach of the year caliber. I just don't think coaching is going to make a difference with this roster.
I think if difference is just, like, decided, like, solely by title, which for the Lakers and the Celtics, it really actually sort of is. But for everyone else, it isn't. I agree with you in that way. But, like, look, if there is, I think, a big picture realization here that, like, you're right. Like, it's not just change the coach. It's we need to change the way we develop players. We need to change the way that we take our own young players and keep them in-house and use them and recognize what they have. You know, we need to make the right choices when we're forced to make them. You know, you mentioned Alex Caruso. I mean, it wasn't just as simple as this, but, you know, the Lakers functionally chose Taylor Horton Tucker instead.
Yeah.
You know, and at the time, I think there was people inside. I know there were people inside the Lakers organization who disagreed with it. But, like, you know, Taylor Horton Tucker was a young player. They thought, but even still, there wasn't even, like, the really clear pathway. Like, that's a ball-dominant player. Like, they misidentified the pathway to him becoming what he could be. You know, which is still not a great player, and you'd still rather have Alex Caruso. But, like, you can't develop ball-dominant players on a team with LeBron James. He's a ball-dominant player. You know, you certainly can't do it on a team with LeBron James after you trade for Russell Westbrook and you have Anthony Davis. Like, that's not – you would be better off taking – you know, somebody with a more clear defined role set. And I think that's going to be the kind of organizational thing that's going to have to shift in some ways. It's not going to be able to, it's not to win like the July 10th memes, which like they have a bunch of summers in a row, weirdly, like every summer. And part of this is because like the fan base is what it is, but like you see the graphics together, right? Like the Lakers go into a season with, you know, let me see if I can remember this. This would have been 3 years ago. You know, you enter the season with LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Russell Westbrook, Carmelo Anthony, Trevor Ariza. Who else am I missing? DeMarcus Cousins, I think, at that time. Rajon Rondo, you know, and it's like titles, all-stars, Hall of Famers, rings. Like, it's a Photoshop. Like, it is, like, it is the graphic. And then it's like, you know, you talk to guys that were there in that mini camp within like 2 days, like some of the younger players were like, if I just play even a little bit of defense, like, I'm going to play on this team. Like, you know, I mean, like, people knew right away. And, you know, they did it again. I think to a certain degree, like, people felt like last summer, they had like a really good summer, right? Like, they didn't have a ton of pathways to improve, but, you know, you re-signed Reeves, you re-signed Frothel, you re-signed Vanderbilt.
Brought the band back.
And then, you know, you add Torian Prince at, you know, the biannual and, you know, Gabe Vincent coming up and starting in the finals, you know, and that it's like, it was like, oh, and you got Cam Reddish on the minimum and you got Daxon Hayes on the minimum. These guys are lottery picks on min deals, like, oh, Rob Pelinka crushed it. And, you know, it's just,
I agree.
Like,
I thought he did. I remember writing at the time. People, I thought he had a great summer.
People really liked it. And it just didn't. It just, again, the pathways weren't clear enough for people. There were too many options. I think the injuries broke a certain way in terms of role players. And, you know, like, even Chris, like, this is like a strange thing when it comes to fit. And, like, we should talk about this a little bit when we talk about the Lakers, because there's this other big thing out there lurking. I mean, take like Austin Reeves and D'Angelo Russell, for instance, right? Like, guys that really like playing with each other, guys that are close friends, have been good for each other on and off the court, I think. But, like, you know, the best version of D'Angelo Russell probably, at least offensively and what he does and likes to do, probably exists without a player like Austin Reeves next to him. And vice versa, too, right? So it's like, if Austin Reeves is going to be your star, if you believe in him in that way, pathway to success, runway to success, no hurdles, count on him, and roll it out there and see if it works. And I think those are going to be the type of decisions the Lakers are going to have to make now, if they want to try to keep this window open. And then they just have to hope that they hit them. They hit on all of them and that they have, you know, some more good injury luck, which does exist. And that's the best you can hope for.
Last thing I want to ask you about, when it comes to the locker room dynamics, which we both know are just as important as how sharp you are on X's and O's, Redick having the relationship with LeBron. We've seen some ex-players, Udonis Haslem most notably, come out and say, look, I think there are guys in that locker room that are probably going to look at Redick side-eyed because they're going to wonder if the words coming out of his mouth are LeBron's words, or is he just too close to LeBron in that particular situation? How do you envision that playing out? Do you think that the relationship that Redick has with LeBron is a positive or a potential negative?
I mean, I think it's kind of an overblown relationship, to be totally honest, that, like, yes, they host a podcast together. There's been 9 episodes of that podcast, right? Like, this isn't like Jerry Seinfeld and, you know, Jason Alexander necessarily, or Larry David. Like, it's not that.
It's a fair kind point.
Like, honestly, it's been 9 episodes. And I think they're, you know, my reporting on this is that, like, there wasn't much of a pre-existing relationship. To be totally honest, like, that, like, I mean, JJ Redick was not on the banana boat. Like, he's not like that kind of, like, that's not his NBA circle. You know what I mean? So I think, like, but like, it does exist, right? Like, there is like an optic trip, sometimes true or false, like, optics have power. I knowing the Laker locker room and the way it is, right? Like you're going to have to hold everyone accountable. I think that's the most important, right? And I think what I know about JJ Redick is, like, he's not someone who's going to allow himself to be walked over. Like, that just doesn't seem like him. Like, he doesn't need the headache, honestly. You know, like, he willingly chose this. Like, I think he's going to do it his way. Now, is that a defense mechanism for players who want to make excuses? And sometimes, yeah, I believe so. But I mean, look, I mean, like, he had Austin Reeves on his podcast, you know, talking about how much he liked Austin Reeves. Does that mean, like, he's going to give Austin Reeves favoritism? Like, I don't think so. You know, he spoke to Anthony Davis this week. You know, does that mean, you know, like, yeah, you're going to take, like, he's going to try to maximize the way these guys. But I think this is where JJ's experiences in the NBA are going to be so critical, because he went from being the best player, like the tippy top, you know, of every scouting report, to being a guy who saw how other people handle best players. right? He saw it in Philly, you know, with Joel and Jimmy Butler. He saw it in the Clippers with Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, and Chris Paul. You know, he saw it in Orlando with how Dwight Howard was handled. You know, like he had a lot of experience in that way, like a real world experience. I think when it comes to locker room dynamics, that I actually think like is like a pretty safe bet on his front. You would think that is what a well-liked player, you know, in these locker rooms. And this is a guy who gets along with Jimmy Butler. This is a guy who, you know, gets along with Chris Paul and Blake Griffin, you know, like he is that kind of a guy. So I think he handled that part probably pretty well. I think, you know, if people want to weaponize it against him, like he's probably sunk already in that way, right? But I do think that this is a locker room that wants to get behind him, that wants to feel like they're pushing in the right direction. Because look, like all those reasons, Chris, you said earlier about like how hard it's going to be, they know all this stuff.
Yeah.
Right? Like they are so aware of that. I mean, they're incredibly hyper-aware people. Like they're confident, they're not delusional. But like they know that if you catch the margins on the right way at the right time and you do that and you maximize role players and you maximize health and availability, if you're good, and I think they were a good team last year, if you're good, you got a shot. And they're not going to be on the rail. They're not going to be the one seed. That's not probably their pathway in this version of this team anymore. But like, are they going to be like functionally the Heat, right? Where, like, you don't want to see them in the playoffs type of the team. Like, and I think that's probably more the linear kind of like point A to point B, point C sort of journey. If this works, that it goes on. And then you're also developing the coach that once this particular sort of life cycle of your team ends, is the guy that's instilled the right values, the right work ethic, that, you know, being a Laker here, I hope there aren't Laker culture jerseys, but like where like you could conceivably throw it on a t-shirt, like something like that, where you have an ethos that exists beyond just stars, because I mean, to your point, I think the future, I mean, it's going to be harder and harder, especially with what the Lakers have. They can't just like reload with like the next three guys that want to be Lakers. They don't have the draft pick. They don't have the young players necessarily to do this. They might have a shot at one, but not if they push in the summer again. So it's a really interesting time for them. And I think they're trying to serve a couple different masters with this type of hire, but I think we both know that's a really hard thing to do in this league.
Hey, the best indication of where the league thinks the Lakers are, I think, is the Pelicans passing on that draft pick this year. Like the Pelicans saying, we're going to wait till next year and take the 2025 pick.
I mean, I think that was always going to happen. Yeah, I think that was always going to happen. I mean, look, you kick the can, right, like down the road.
Yeah. Not a great draft this year, next year could be good, but you're generally right.
I mean, like there are reasons to like short the Lakers next year. You know, starting with the fact that it's like they're, you know, their two best players are one and Anthony Davis, like that. I'm not assigning who their best players are either old or injured. You know, so that's a good reason to bet against them.
Yeah, no question. Check out Dan Wojcicki's stuff in the LA Please. Times all week long. Going to be a very busy time, as it always is. Never boring in Lakerland, Dan. Always appreciate your time, man.
Thanks for having me, Chris. Appreciate you.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that American Family Insurance agents can help build a customized renter's policy so you can protect stuff like this, or this, or even this. Case in point. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.